From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast.
This is MC Fontaine welcoming you to another Bletchley Park podcast extra. In this episode, we bring you the longer versions of some of the interviews that we did shortly after Her Royal Highness the Duchess of Cornwall's visit to Bletchley Park in February. It's always an honour to interview any of our veterans. So many of them are just itching to tell their story. And in doing so, we're capturing those stories for generations to come. And for me personally, it's just a joy to see their faces quite literally light up as they just roll back the years and remember what they were doing when many of them were still in their teens. So first, we bring you Aileen Hasdell, who gives us an insight of her entire service with Y Group, from joining up to being demobbed.
Aileen Hasdell.
Can you explain to me what your service was during the war?
I worked for Y Group. I was called up and went to Droitwich for initial training. We were sorted out there. They put you into groups. And we finished up with about six girls, and they told us we were possibles for an important job. But they never said what the job was. We were taken to London. They had sort of an underground wireless room in one of the hotels in London. We were there given aptitude tests, and the aptitude test was to see if you were acceptable for Morse code. They just threw this through the earphones at you, and you had to put down what you thought. And from that, they gathered who they wanted for this particular job. And then we were chosen, I suppose, as suitable, and we were sent to Trowbridge for training. Ghastly place. We were on Salisbury Plain in the mud, in huts, and we had a couple of months training there, I think. And then we were suddenly whipped off in the middle of the night, lanterns and everything, all dead secret, and we didn't know what we were doing still. They never told us. We just knew it was something to do with Morse code, because they were dinning Morse code into you day and night. And we were transported, and we landed up at Fleetwood. And we went across to the Isle of Man in the morning. We went to Douglas on the Isle of Man, and we finished our training there. And Douglas Castle was set up as a sort of reception area. They had wireless sets all in the castle, and from there they were taking down German messages. This was about the first time we knew we were going to be taking down German messages. They never told us. But they did tell us at the beginning of the course that it was going to be highly secretive. We would never, ever be able to tell anybody what we had done during the war. Never, ever. So if we wanted out, we had to go then, not when they started training us.
Did you sign the Official Secrets Act at that point?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And then we had about another 3 months at Douglas Isle of Man, and we were taking down these German-coded messages. We had to take various exams along the way. When we were suitable, I presume, we were then sent to different stations in England. They could have been anywhere in England. We didn't know. It just had to go where you were sent. And mine was Leicestershire area. This area served Bow Manor, or Bow Manor served it, I don't know which. But Bow Manor was like situated in parkland, and it wasn't visible from the road. Once you turned this little corner to go into it, you disappeared off the face of the earth. And we were all billeted in little villages round about. And we were taken by troop carrier in shifts, just listening in for about 6 hours to German-coded messages.
It's not very often that we hear the story about the Y stations.
We fed Bletchley Park with coded messages. There would have been no reason for Bletchley Park to be here without these messages that we intercepted. And they were all in code, German coded messages. And I used to wonder whether they were any good, because, of course, you had to take these messages down through terrible interference, and you wouldn't always get a complete message. They were always came over in blocks of five. five letters, five Morse code letters, and you may not have got them all. And I used to think, what good is this? But we had stations all over the country. So say I got two letters out of a group of five, somebody else might have picked up the other three. So when they came back to Bletchley Park, they had to sort all this sort of rubbish out and get it into some sort of order and then start decoding.
And what year was this?
Beginning in 1943, I think I was called it, 42, 43. So it was through from 43 to 45, in my instance anyway, because I was there till the end of the war. I was demobbed, discharged about 2 months before the end of the war because I was pregnant. I had got married in the meantime, so I just missed the end of the war. But we were all disbanded kind of by then. You know, the war was virtually over anyway. It was a shame, though. I would have liked to have seen it to the end.
What did you do after the war?
Well, of course, I was pregnant, so I didn't do anything after the war. I just raised a family.
Well, you did something. You definitely helped with that.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time. And it's nice to get a story from someone from the Y stations that were another integral part of the story of Bletchley Park. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening.
Not a lot of people realised that Bletchley Park, as it grew, needed to have outstations, and Gwen Favell worked at one of these.
Well, I was a bomb operator at Eastcote on Sea Watch. These machines never stopped. They went for 24 hours. You had to work in shifts, eight-hour shifts, which meant sometimes you were working all night. Three watches, and the other watch was on leave. We did get extra leave. Sea Watch was actually on duty when they announced VE Day. So it stopped the following day. The chief officer gave us all a little pep talk. Well, I think she thought we were all going to lose our honour because of everybody feeling free and throwing away caution to the winds and celebrating and drinking. She was, oh, woman. It's been terrible for her. And we all rushed up to London and throwing the crowds there outside the palace shouting and marching them down Piccadilly with about 20 Canadian Air Force officers all arm in arm. Had a marvellous day, and then we slept in the YWCA Baker Street, which we always did. Came back to Eastcote the next day, and it must have been the following day then that we then sat outside. There was a heat wave. Sat outside and smashed up the bombs. Well, didn't actually smash them. The Air Force boys, who were GCHQ engineers, they had dismantled the big things, and we had all the small stuff and all these hundreds of drums. We had to take them apart. Everything was counted, screws and bearings and so on.
Did that make you feel, oh, what have we been doing?
No, that made we were all happy. That was it. It was the end of it.
So it sort of closed everything off for
yes,
you?
Yes, when we did come here, I got pushed into this big hut to the right of here, this great big giant machine, and told to help this other end with this gigantic machine. It was just for a few days, and then I finished up going on overseas leave and went to Ceylon. When we were there, there was none of this work going on. We were doing the victualling for the ships. And in fact, some girls from here, civil service girls who wanted to go abroad, they had to join the Wrens, had to come in uniform. There weren't very many, but they were all made leading Wrens. And we were all annoyed about that because those who were leading Wrens had to lose their hook. It was only like a Lance Corporal's stripe, but you got a bit more money. I wasn't one, but I was on the waiting list. I'd passed my exam. But there were such nice girls anyway. You know, you couldn't have been angry with them. I know only about 20 of us altogether for this last group to go abroad. And we went on the New Amsterdam, which was a Dutch troop ship. And because there were just such a few of us, and the charming Dutch people, we put for first class with all the officers that wouldn't have done that in the British Army. Had an absolutely marvellous time. And I became engaged to a lovely Dutch doctor a fortnight later, leaning over the rail in the moonlight. Yes. And I was in Ceylon for about a year. Then we had to come back. We were the last to leave. They closed all the renneries, and we actually lived in the YWCA in Colombo. And then we had to come back on the Empress of Scotland or something with the British Navy.
I bet that wasn't first class,
was
it?
No, it wasn't. No, it was down at the bottom, and it was horrible.
Demobbed in 46, were you?
Late 46 or early 47. And then finished up in Portsmouth. So it was a very happy time, really. I just wish I could meet some of the other girls that were at the table when we were breaking up the bombs, because we didn't know anything about Alan Turing then, or even the word Enigma.
But did you know that you were obviously helped break the codes?
Yes, so they said that then, that we all had to sign the Official Secrets Act.
A lot of people in different jobs to do with Bletchley Park or at Bletchley Park didn't actually know what they were. You know, they just thought they were a tiny little cog, but they were a tiny cog in a bigger sort of machine that was helping to,
yes,
you know, break,
yes,
the codes.
Yes, but they, well, I mean, obviously that goes on in all countries. The Germans were breaking ours, weren't they, everybody? And my husband, who he was in the army, but he lived near there when he was home on leave, he said the Americans on the one of their batches was a link of chain without fallings and some lightning going through it. So what would you think that was? He said it was obvious there was some sort of interception. You know, he didn't know. He didn't know anything until I did. And he didn't know anything from me until, was it 25 years later, when it suddenly came up on the television. This girl was talking about this bomb, and we had it here at Gayhurst, and I don't know where, but I said to him, I said, now, bloody hell, I said, that's what I was doing. Nobody told me I could talk about it. My poor old mum and dad were long gone, I couldn't tell them.
Thank you so much.
I wasn't the only person interviewing our veterans that day. Kerry Howard is a researcher, writer, and a long-time friend of Bletchley Park. She's kindly offered to become the Bletchley Park podcast's, well, shall we say, roving reporter. In a future podcast, we'll introduce you properly to Kerry. But for now, here's an interview she recorded with two Bletchley locals who both worked at the park during the war.
My name is Peggy Dorrington.
I'm Alma Whiteman.
And would you like to tell me a little bit about your time here at Bletchley Park during the war?
Well, there's not a lot that I ever discuss with people about what we did. I don't know why, it's just one of those things. We were in Hut 7 and Block C, but somehow it's quite a difficult thing to talk about. You were told to keep a secret for so long, you don't sort of speak happily about it anymore. It's one of those things, it was sort of ingrained upon you, I suppose. Not very comfortable to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Where we worked on shifts, 9 to 4, then the next week was 4 to midnight, and the next week was midnight to 9 in the morning. You just worked all the time you were there. What about you?
Well, I think I've discovered I'm able to talk about the fact that we worked Hollerith machines.
Were you friends if you worked in the same department, or did you meet later?
No, we knew one another from the beginning, really, but we were always divided up into teams, and we served on different shifts.
Right.
You met in the day sometimes, didn't,
yes,
we?
Yes.
The day shift sometimes came together.
Did you talk about your work to one another?
Well, we only spoke within the department. You wouldn't,
yes,
dream of talking about it elsewhere.
No.
You never talked about it outside or anything like that. Not to your family or anybody.
What was your first impression of Bletchley when you arrived?
Well, I was a raw schoolgirl, 17, and I'd never done anything before work. It was all a bit overwhelming, I suppose, really.
Where did you come from to come to Bletchley?
We were both local. I was recruited by other people from my school who were already here. Recommendation, shall we say.
Yes, I lived at Leighton Buzzard, so I was able to live at home. I was recruited by someone who was working at Bletchley Park.
They didn't advertise publicly.
No, he was quietly recruiting around the area, you know, and one word led to another, so to speak.
What do you think made them pick you?
I was already working in a solicitor's office in Leighton Buzzard, and this person actually met my husband, my boyfriend at the time, who was home on leave from the RAF. They were playing billiards and obviously got talking about what I was going to be doing during the war, because we were getting the call-up age. And between them, they decided it might be a good idea if I applied to Bletchley Park. Late 1941. So it was
same time as I did.
Well, you were there a little bit before.
That's right,
yeah.
What do you remember most about the park? I believe you stayed in a particular area. You didn't sort of wander all around the park.
You weren't you only went to your own rooms in your own block. You didn't really move about within that very much.
So in your sort of free time when you met in the day, where did you sort of meet up and go?
Well, we didn't have much free time. We went to the meals together and back again. Yeah. That was about our lot.
Yeah, we had a canteen here.
Well, we ate in here.
Yeah, we did.
When we first came, in style, in the dining rooms.
Yes,
and then when there were so many people, they built a horses sort of canteen outside, which was nothing like as nice. Do you remember the hut that Commander Bradshaw's wife ran with the coffee just across the path?
I can't.
A coffee hut. That's where we went and had our coffee.
Oh, right. Yeah, when you were a little bit previous to me. Yeah. But so this is where we spent any spare time that we had. But we had fun in the summer months sitting round the boating lake. We actually had a little go on that boat now and again.
I remember the geese.
Yeah.
When did you first come back to the park?
Oh dear.
Was it 50-year reunion? 50-year?
It was that one when I got in touch with everybody.
That's right, yes. That would be the 50th anniversary, I think it was.
Can't quite remember. I think it was earlier than that.
Oh.
We did manage to get a big group from our particular section. I think there were about 30 of us here that day.
I didn't get to meet them all.
No, but you came to that first one I circularised everybody about.
That's right.
Did you keep in touch after the war?
Yes,
quite a few of
us. I mean, we still do.
Yes. Quite a few have passed on.
So many, yes.
Yeah.
You stayed on after the war, did you, Peggy?
Yes.
Did you stay until the Bletchley Park closed, or did you both go to Eastcote?
Well, we had to all go. When the park closed, we went together. We were all taken by bus to where we were going, to the next station sort of thing. Eastcote was our next place, and we were there till they moved GCHQ to Cheltenham.
Are you able to say what you were doing while you were at Eastcote?
Same sort of work.
I mean, you know, we were at GCHQ, Eastcote and Cyprus, and there we are.
Yes. Did you consider carrying on your career with GCHQ and moving to Cheltenham?
No, I wouldn't go.
Well, I was married by that time, so...
You know. I mean, I was married and I wanted a family, so...
Yes, that's right.
I wasn't interested in doing it. I'd already done it for 13 years. I didn't do it, couldn't do it any longer.
So you stayed local?
Well, I stayed where my husband and I were living at the time, yes.
And coming back to the park, having a look around the whole site, what did you think of seeing it in its entirety?
Well, it's nothing like it was.
No.
It's sort of changed completely to what it was when we were here.
Do you have fond memories of your time here?
Definitely.
Never unhappy?
No.
Tired?
We were so young, you just enjoyed life when you could.
It's a bit of my life I wouldn't want to have missed, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Thank you very much.
And finally, here's another reason I enjoy producing this podcast so much. It's the surprises that can happen. Like this quick couple of minutes I grabbed with a visitor at our recent Battle of the Atlantic talks. One of the amazing things about Bletchley Park is meeting people who have unusual stories connected to Bletchley Park. Not just the people who worked here or worked at the Y stations, but people whose families had connections here. And I've got one with me today.
I'm Fenella Lees, daughter of Commander David Barham, who was on board the Bulldog when U-110 came to the surface. Unfortunately, my father's now nearly 93, and as you say, I think he's done a fantastic life, and not many of his compatriots are still around, so he's doing pretty well, and he knows I'm up here today.
What he did was so unique. There's very few people that actually have done what he did, which was jump onto a sinking U-boat, basically, didn't he?
Yes, I mean, he was commanded to get a boarding party together, and he rowed across in a whaler to approach this submarine, which he had no idea what he was going to find when he got there. And so they boarded, and they didn't know whether it had been depth charges on it or whether there were still some of the crew left on board.
And he actually managed to capture an Enigma machine and the code books.
That's correct. He was, obviously, he was the first one to go down the conning tower, which is probably one of the things he still gets nightmares about. And they did a recce of the submarine to see what was left there. And when they felt pretty confident that there was no one on board, they started to collect together as much information as they possibly could. They were, in fact, there for over 6 hours.
And you've come today with a large group of friends.
There's a large group of us here from the Royal Leamington Yacht Club who've all taken very much an interest in the Enigma capture. And my father, in his youngest days, has taught several times around Leamington about his capture.
So was your interest in yachts and seafaring given to you by your father, do you think?
Oh, yes, from a very young age, every holiday we had was sailing.
Please thank your father for his service.
Yes, and, well, thanks Bletchley for inviting us here today.
Very special what he did. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Why not follow our channel on Audioboo, where you can also subscribe to the RSS feed, or you can subscribe to us in iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter, where we're at @BParkPodcast, or join the Bletchley Park Facebook group. And of course, we must thank Audioboo, who make this podcast possible.